confess that I've never really been all that good at heights, my dear Connor.
The fastest you can go is about 125 miles an hour, Doc. What they call terminal velocity. And in 300 feet, you won't get anywhere near that speed. Though, if you're planning on trying to reach it, maybe you should go before me.
Your so-called sense of humor, madam, is about as funny as undergoing an urgent appendectomy at the hands of a blindfolded drunken gorilla.
Mildred paused in the damaged doorway and blew him a kiss.
Mwah! Wish me luck as you wave me goodbye.
I can hear them up top. Be here soon.
Yeah. Better give them something to think about, huh?
The boy grinned.
Ready in here!
You get moving. I'll just wait a while.
The Heckler & Koch G12 caseless rifle was set on triple burst. Single shot would be less effective, and full auto a waste of precious ammo. Ryan moved light-footed to the bottom of the flight of stairs, picking a position to the right under an alcove. Hidden in a block of dark shadows, he watched as the others pushed their way past the elevator sectors and reached for the dangling lengths of rope. Christy was last. She gently shepherded the young boy in front of her, patting him on the shoulder to encourage him into the freezing chasm. Her eyes, glittering emerald in the dim light, turned toward Ryan's hiding place.
Don't take too long, lover.
Right.
Christy eased herself past the dull metal of the doors and out of Ryan's sight. He was only too aware of how intensely vulnerable their position was. If any of the gang in the street above came down from the ice-shrouded rubble while they were still climbing on the thin cords, then life would become very brief and bloody. Ryan waited. A tiny pebble, hardly larger than a grain of dust, came skittering down the flight of steps, reaching the bottom and rolling from sight. They were on their way. The tip of Ryan's tongue flicked out and ran across his dry lips. He could hear them coming. Ryan's finger tightened, putting a couple more ounces of pressure on the release mechanism. The shadow of the first of the invaders was edging along the steps, sliding down toward the floor, then was joined by a second. The whispering voices carried clearly to Ryan.
Fucking gone!
Hey, look, set doors.
Hey, blown fucking open! Must have had good blasters for that.
Boy stairs?
Got it. Follow up. Yeah.
The shadows moved quickly toward the warped set doors to the elevator shaft.
No, you don't.
As a firefight, it wasn't much. Ryan drew a bead on the shoulders of the leader of the gang, aiming at the center of the clenched white fist daubed on the back of the tattered jacket. He squeezed the trigger and felt, rather than heard, the triple concussion. Ryan wasn't even watching as the teenager was flung forward by the hammering impact of the caseless bullets. Ryan shifted his aim. In less than 4 seconds, the first quartet of the White Fist gang was dead in the dirt at the bottom of the stairs. Only now did Ryan move from his hiding place, darting to one side so that he could see up the old staircase. There were 4 or 5 more of the skinny youths, only one holding a blaster. Ryan shot him through the throat, the bullets also killing the lad behind him.
Let's get the fuck out of here!
The others dropped their knives and ran screaming up and out into the street beyond. Ryan considered going after them, but he mastered his killing urge. Slinging the rifle across his shoulders and moving past the jumble of bodies, he squeezed through the narrow gap in the doors and reached for the knotted rope. When the elevator cage had tumbled down the shaft, trailing its snapped cables behind, it had done considerable damage to the interior of the shaft. Some of the rusted supports had come away from the sides, leaving a number of places where they could all rest in comparative safety before pulling down the rope from its release knot above. It would then be retied, and the procedure repeated.
Gonna have to get through the remains of the elevator. Must be wrecked down at the bottom.
Shouldn't be that difficult.
Ryan tried to see into the Stygian pit.
Face it when we get there.
The only serious problem that confronted them was the ice. During the time that they'd been in the Ville of New York, there'd been a lot of snow and rain. It had seeped through and run down the inside of the shaft, coating everything in a hard, glassy layer. It was difficult to fix the ropes, and Ryan had to use the 18-inch blade of his Ponga to chip away at the ice, sending hundreds of tiny diamond splinters cascading to the bottom of the shaft. Despite the problems, they eventually made it safely down. There had been some alarms and diversions on the way, the worst of them being Doc Tanner's boots slipping as he abseiled down. For some unaccountable reason, this left him dangling upside down, swinging slowly and majestically like an antiquated pendulum. It was Dean who shinnied down the narrow cord to help the old man, hanging on by one hand while he tugged him the right way up. He allowed Doc time to recover his equilibrium, then carried on to the next tethering point with him. When Ryan came down last, Doc still had his arm around the 10-year-old. It was hard to tell who was pretending to comfort whom. The 300-foot fall had smashed apart the passenger compartment of the elevator like a matchstick box. The roof had split back like a peeled orange, and the sides had impacted and fragmented. The whole cage was less than 3 feet high, giving them all a chilling glimpse of what their fate would have been if they'd failed to escape the drop. One by one, they picked their way through the devastated heap of twisted metal and plastic into the passage beyond.
Oh, man, how are we gonna get down there?
What?
Ryan was the last one out of the shaft, and he paused for a moment as he heard faint echoing shouts above them. He strained his head back and peered toward the tiny pinprick of silver light, but he couldn't see anything. As he joined the others, they all heard a series of rumbling crashes as lumps of masonry were heaved down the shaft.
That was close.
Not close enough.
The companions walked down a staircase and then along a curving passage, its walls hewn from living rock. Bare quartz glittered in the darkness. The overhead lights seemed even more faint than they'd been a few days ago. JB led the way through the control area and into the anteroom next to the gateway entrance. Dean hung back, his face turned up to his father's.
We have to go in there?
Only way out of here.
You sure I'll be safe?
Ryan knelt by his son.
It's unpleasant, and it can be dangerous. I won't lie to you about that. But it'll get us someplace else. And whatever happens, happens to all of us.
The boy smiled, reaching out to take Ryan's hand.
Then let's go. How's
it? Just sit down here, back against the wall, like the others.
The boy looked around. Doc was squatting to his left, cross-legged. Christy was making herself comfortable beyond Ryan. Next was Mildred, leaning back, an expression of unease on her face. JB was last around, taking off his spectacles and folding them carefully before tucking them into one of the pockets of his capacious coat. He caught Dean's eye and winked at him.
Doesn't take long.
Sure, Dean. It's like banging your skull against a wall. It's terrific when you finally stop.
Ignore them. You'll feel a bit dizzy and maybe a bit sick. You black out. We all do. Nothing to worry about.
How does it work?
Work that one out for us, Dean, and you'll get the biggest ace on the line ever. Last person who knew the answer to that probably died off around 100 years ago.
Ryan moved to the heavy door, hesitating with his hand on it.
All we know is that we shut this, and there's a kind of humming noise and a sort of mist. And then we're someplace else.
Could we be someplace dead?
Never happened yet. Everyone ready? Here we go.
He tugged the door shut. He moved into the space beside his son and sat down, stretching his legs out ahead of him, pressing back against the cold, golden armaglass. The metal discs in the floor and ceiling began to shimmer, and tendrils of pale fog came ghosting out of the empty air. Dean pressed his panicked hands over his ears against the noise.
My head hurts, Dad!
It'll soon be over!
Ryan could feel the whole thing vibrating against his spine, more strongly than he remembered, quivering like Warwag 1 tackling a deep incline. On one side, Christy was reaching for his hand, shouting something he couldn't hear. On the other side, Dean was screaming, high and shrill.
Huh? What? What?
Ryan glanced down and saw that a thin caterpillar of dark venous blood was trickling from the boy's nostrils. Doc was halfway across the polished floor, hands out toward Ryan like claws. The old man's pale, rheumy eyes were staring blindly, almost as though someone were behind them, trying to press them out of the sockets. Blood seeped from the corners of Doc's open, mutely screaming mouth. Mildred had fallen sideways, her face as gray as parched soil, her knees drawn up to her chest in an agonized fetal curl. JB was trying to get to his feet, reaching toward the locked door, but the wraiths of cloud were now so thick inside the chamber that he'd become almost invisible. The vibration was getting worse and worse, and Ryan could feel a jolting within his spine, as though a steel rod were being rotated in the core of each individual vertebra. There was a voice inside his head.
Does the controlling control need control?
Ryan knew that something had gone appallingly wrong, and he also knew It was too late to do anything about it. His final thought was to reach out with both hands, one toward Christie and the other toward his son. Then came blackness.